Good morning. We'll call this meeting of the House Ag Policy Committee to order. And welcome to all of the folks in the audience, especially those with the blue jackets on this morning. It's always a highlight of the year when you come down here and we have the reception, like last night, for example. And despite the weather, despite the roads, a good turnout, so thank you all for being here. I think they came a day early, which was turned out to be a pretty good thing to get down here and take part in the activities. We have a couple of bills on the agenda, but first of all, it's, again, a highlight to welcome the FFA students. And a couple of folks are going to come on up to the testifiers table and visit with us, talk with us. And then if we have a second, we'll go around the entire room and have you introduce yourselves and where you're from, what school you go to. So I believe Katie and Maddie were going to come up to the table. Good morning. And before you start, please identify yourselves for the record so we know who you are down the road. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Katie Benson. I'm originally from the Staples-Motley FFA chapter, and this year I have the privilege to serve as Minnesota State FFA president. I am currently attending the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, majoring in agricultural education.
Hello, my name is Maddie Wenninger. I'm originally from the Howard Lake Waverly Winsted FFA chapter, currently serving as the Minnesota FFA State Sentinel, and I am attending South Dakota State University studying agricultural education in Spanish.
And it's really wonderful to be here at the Capitol today. We are glad to be here representing all of the students across the state of Minnesota, nearly 11,000 of which are developing their potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through their involvement in the FFA and agricultural education. You can see there's a few blue jackets in the room with us this morning. Because of the weather, unfortunately, there were lots of schools that were unable to travel this morning to meet with us. But hopefully those schools will be rescheduling and coming to visit you on other dates throughout the spring. Our teachers, unfortunately, had to make that decision to do what is best for our students to keep them safe. And that's what our teachers are doing throughout the state of Minnesota every day. They're doing their best to help develop our students, to help them have good success in and out of the blue jacket and in and out of the classroom. So one of the students that really comes to mind who has really benefited from this FFA experience is one of my classmates from my school named Brendan. Now, Brendan was not a fan of school at all. He hated his math class. He hated his English class. But if you got him into the fish and wildlife or natural resource sections of our agriculture classes, it was like a completely different student. He absolutely loved school. He loved being there and learning about the things that he was passionate with in the outdoors. And so that was one way that Brendan was able to find success through his time through high school was through the agricultural classes. But not only in school did he find success, he was able to apply what he learned in school to a supervised agricultural experience or a hands-on learning project where he was able to make fishing rods to sell to his friends and family and members of the community. And so he was able to really promote that part of natural resources. And through his involvement in the Blue Jacket and in FFA, he was able to develop leadership and communication skills, as well as learn that he wanted to be involved in fisheries and wildlife management as a career opportunity. So that's just one student and one story of the many that are here in this room, of the ways that FFA and agricultural education really help students to be successful in all aspects of their life and to develop these students for the future.
As you can tell, we're super proud to be a part of the Minnesota FFA Association. We like to say we're providing 10,000 opportunities for 10,000 students in the land of 10,000 lakes. And so just some of those opportunities that we get the privilege of taking part of and giving to students at the state level include camps, conferences, and other experiences. So a new conference that we just started this past summer was called Intense. So it's for members that are coming into or out of 10th grade. And we took 22 students around the state of Minnesota for 5 days, and we visited universities, college campuses, agricultural businesses, and other farms. And students were able to really see those opportunities that they have in agriculture in Minnesota. I was talking to Representative Poppy earlier, and I was telling her about one student who really benefited from this experience. Her name was Grace. And she really didn't know if she had a place in agriculture prior to this conference. But after going on all of these different visits, she knew that she wanted to go to the University of Minnesota Crookston to study equine science. And so I think that's really cool that students are able to really see what careers they want to go into, because we have so many opportunities in agriculture, and FFA is really promoting that in students. In fact, we have 41% of our membership in Minnesota FFA is economically disadvantaged. So we thank you for all the support that you give us toward financing those camps and conferences. That intense conference would not have been possible without a grant that we got through MailC. We're really proud to say that the Minnesota FFA Association is giving those opportunities to all types of students from all different types of backgrounds.
Very good. Questions or comments from members? Katie or Maddie, one thing that we tried to work on here in the Education Committee and in the Ag Committee is allowing for some more activities in the summertime. Your FFA instructors do a great job. A lot of them work year-round for a little additional compensation. Talk about some of the things that go on in the summertime that the FFA is involved in and that your instructors are key in helping you with.
Yeah, for sure. So,
Maddie, go ahead.
Yeah. I had the privilege of growing up as an advisor's kid. And so I was taking place in FFA all throughout the summer and throughout the school year as well. And a lot of other students are as well. In my chapter, we do community-supported agriculture programs, so CSAs, where we garden about an acre and a half of our school land. And with the produce that we produce there, students are able to work. We have about 12 to 15 employees that work in our garden, and they harvest our produce, communicate with the shareholders, and as well as taking care of the garden and delivering those shares to the shareholders. So I had the privilege of being a part of that and actually working as part of that CSA enterprise. And so my two ag teachers, without having a summer contract, it would have been really difficult for them to be there for us and supporting our supervised agriculture experiences. Kind of like Katie was talking a little bit about Brendan having the opportunity to take part in wildlife and fisheries. And so that's just one example of what my FFA chapter is doing in the summer, is those community-supported agriculture programs, which I know quite a few of us have probably taken part in gardening, and we know how beneficial that is. So it's been really cool to have that opportunity.
Thank you. Question from Representative Mahoney.
Maybe for the chair, how do I get a taller seat? I'll get this down to my... Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, Katie and Maggie, Maggie, I think you alluded to the fact that 41% of your members are from economically disadvantaged families. Could you elaborate on that? Is that where are those? What's the families they're coming from, or what's the area that they that is more prevalent in than not? Could you elaborate at all on that, or if you don't have that at hand, I'll certainly find that out later. But.
Yeah. So.
Maggie, go ahead.
That number is taken from the number of our students that get free and reduced lunches. So that's spread all throughout Minnesota. I think, Katie, you could talk a little bit about that.
We don't have specific information necessarily on where those populations are located, but we do know that we're doing our best to make sure that we are allocating the funds that we receive from all of our different sponsorships to make sure that each of these students has the ability to invest in their future, even if their families can't necessarily afford it.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe to staff, but I'll ask the staff would be able to answer this a little later offline here, but do you know if those are coming from, I believe you have chapters in our metro counties.
Mm-hmm.
So my question would be, is that 41% coming from the metro area or from greater Minnesota area?
It's coming from all over Minnesota in different areas. So we have 195 chapters throughout the state of Minnesota. We don't know the exact disbursement of that 41%, but we do have it in all areas throughout Minnesota.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Representative Kunsh-Podin.
Thank you, Chair. Well, my question was very similar to that in how FFA works within the urban communities. I started a farmer's market in my community and have been a participant in these CSAs, and I think they're just absolutely wonderful. And so I'm wondering how your organization might work with local farmers markets, farm-to-table sort of restaurant things. There's certainly potential for entrepreneurship in that area. And then also maybe how you might participate in local farmers markets.
Yeah. Who wants to tackle that one?
Representative Anderson.
Maddie, go ahead.
So I additionally had the opportunity to work at the Minneapolis Farmers Market when I was in high school. And so we talked about those supervised agriculture experiences. And so I think that's a place where we really see our students developing, is taking that non-traditional knowledge that they gain in the classroom and applying that outside of the classroom in a way that they see most fit for themselves. So at the farmers market, I was able to thrive through talking to different customers and really learning about different horticultural items and how that works. So that's how I have had the experience of working at a farmers market. Additionally, my FFA chapter, we also have a small farmers market in our community that we sold some of our flowers that we grew in our greenhouse at that farmers market to gain or to raise some money for us going to National FFA Convention. And so I foresee other FFA chapters doing that as well.
Follow-up question? Okay. Representative?
Are there any chapters in urban, in the cities, like the Twin Cities or some of the larger metropolitan areas that students who maybe don't live in an agricultural home or community but are interested in that might be able to participate in some way?
Katie, go ahead.
We have several schools that do have FFA chapters in the metro area. We're very excited. Como Park has their FFA chapter will be chartered this coming April, so that will be a brand new chapter to bring some more FFA into the metro areas. We have other chapters in Highland Park as well as Vagnes Heights. And so there are several chapters located in the metro area, and we're also working on working with some of those metro schools to be able to help them realize if they have the potential to create these FFA programs to give those students the opportunity. And we definitely see that these students have non-traditional agriculture students. I myself did not grow up on a traditional farm. And so even throughout rural Minnesota, a lot of our FFA members that you'll be seeing at the Capitol today did not necessarily grow up on a farm, and they've been able to find their path in agriculture through the FFA.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Katie, that's a good kind of a segue here. If a metro school wanted to become involved with FFA, what's needed? You have to have students, obviously, that want it. Instructors, classes, what are the prerequisites to establish an FFA chapter or any school, really, for that matter?
So the first thing that is needed is there needs to be an agricultural education program in the school. Those students need to have access to agricultural classes because our base is within the classroom and providing that education from a teacher. So those are some of the things that are necessary. Some of the classes that qualify might not be what you would think of a traditional agriculture class. So, you know, any time that students are working with plant science or in a greenhouse or understanding animal science and companion animals, those are all things that count as agricultural courses. So when schools have those classes, then they have the opportunity to start an FFA chapter. And there is a process for that school administration and teachers work with through our state staff at the FFA.
Very good. I have a question, but Representative stepped out for a second. But members, any other questions, comments? Now a question from Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I'm suffering with this sinus cold, whatever thing that is going around, so I apologize for that. Thanks for mentioning that it's a co-curricular activity, because I think sometimes people don't know that, which goes back to the fact that we need more ag educators, which goes back to the fact that we luckily now have three places in the state of Minnesota where students can go to become ag educators. So just an aside on all of that. I did have a question, though, about the cost to a student to participate in FFA. What is there a base cost? What would that be, actually?
So our members pay national, state, regional, and chapter dues. So those are all different depending on what chapter you go to. So at my chapter, it was $20 per year. So that was a flat rate that we would pay each year, whether depending on how much the national state dues were, and then you would send off those dues, and then the rest is for your chapter. So it really depends on what each chapter decides to charge each student, but we are also now seeing some chapters become affiliated. So that is that the chapter pays a set amount for a specific amount of members in their chapter, and then with that, the members are able to pay little to no cost. And it can be through funding from supporters in their local area or through states. So.
Follow-up, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The CSA and the other kinds of activities that you do and fundraise with that, are you able to use those dollars to then support your chapter?
Mm-hmm. Yes. One of the things that I think it really varies where you end up going to school. A lot of the kids from my FFA chapter do not end up paying their dues on the chapter level for that $20 that covers their dues. A lot of the work that they do to fundraise and the work that we have through our FFA alumni and supporters in our community helps to cover those costs, especially for those students who have trouble affording it. So there is a support system put in place for a lot of these students. I know that there are some chapters across the state where they have the support and the funding, and the students do not pay a dime. And so it depends on the support system that's available. And like we said before, all of the support that we receive as a state foundation, we ultimately hope to funnel down to the chapter so that these members are getting the best opportunities possible at the lowest cost for them.
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. So I had an interesting conversation with Max, who's from Northfield in my district, and we were talking about the possibility of having a program in Northfield. There used to be one, was discontinued, and now students go to a great program over in Randolph. But in our conversation, I mentioned that I'm surprised. I have two private colleges in my district, and I'm surprised at the number of college students who, either through research or other things, are very interested in agriculture. And it occurred to me that maybe there's an opportunity to engage some of those students to be involved in FFA in some way, maybe helping a teacher be with an advisory role or something like that, but to get them engaged or involved, there might be a role to play there. Would that be something that you might consider?
Comment, Maddie, go ahead.
For sure. We're always looking for mentors and volunteers in FFA. We really believe that everyone has a different perspective to bring, and they can all help our FFA members in some way. So we actually have a section of our supervised agriculture experience programs that includes research, and having those types of mentors for students would be absolutely phenomenal. I know a lot of our urban schools are really big on researching, whether it's plant genetics, food science. There's so many different areas that we can research, and having those college students pair with those high school students would be really cool to see.
Very good. And once again, outstanding spokesman for FFA, we really appreciate your visiting with us today. And if we could, all the FFAers here, if you could stand up and speak loudly and clearly and tell us where you're from, your chapter, and maybe just a quick project. I have beef cattle, whatever like that. So go ahead. Let's start over here.
Oh, perfect. So good morning, everybody. My name is Laura Demuth, and I'm originally from the Grand Rapids FFA chapter, and I'm serving as this year's state reporter.
I'm Emily Pliscott from the Kenny-Wanamingo FFA chapter, and I have the opportunity to serve as this year's state vice president, and I have an ag background in raising goats.
Hello, everyone. My name is Spencer Flood. I'm originally from the Dasco Cato FFA chapter, and I'm currently serving as this year's state treasurer.
Good morning. morning. My name is Kylie Coles. I'm from the Litchfield FFA chapter, and I am proud to be serving Minnesota FFA as the 2017-2018 State Secretary. I'm a seventh-generation agriculturalist. I've grown up on a farm raising beef cattle and sheep.
I'm Nick Spinoza, Southwest Metro FFA Group. I'm not a fancy officer like them. I have a fun little chicken and goat.
I'm Val Pfeiffer from the Baltimore Chapter FFA, and I unfortunately have no agriculture background.
I'm Miranda Frolic from Sleepy Eye, and I am our chapter's historian.
My name is Callie Christensen. I'm involved in the Sleepy Eye FFA chapter, and this is, I think, my fourth year at FFA.
My name is Becca Wilkes. I'm one of the Buffalo FFA chapter, and my ag background.
I'm Ben Hollander from the Staples Valley FFA chapter, and I live on a crop farm.
I'm Olivia Leslie from the Staples Valley FFA chapter, and I do not have any ag background, but I have found my spot in FFA.
I'm Kai Billy from the Staples Valley FFA chapter. I'm serving as the secretary this year, and I sadly don't have much ag background.
I'm Anna Sack from the Dover Yoda FFA chapter, and I'm a fourth generation dairy farmer.
Hey everyone, my name is Lake Arzel. I'm serving the southeast region of Minnesota, and I'm an entrepreneurship sheep farmer.
My name is Matt Munson. I'm a very proud sixth-generation farmer from Southwest Metro, and I am currently the chapter treasurer.
Angelica Beer, Southwest Metro, and I'm the second generation of the
That's the I'm Max Johnson. I am involved in the Randolph FFA chapter. I'm a third generation farmer starting a meat cattle, but I basically moved on to the meat industry.
I'm Elena Wong from the Randolph FFA chapter. I'm a first generation FFA member, and I have horses, donkeys, and just started raising chickens.
My name is Elaine Jordan. I am a member of the Randolph FFA chapter, and I've grown up raising horses and sheep.
And up in the, by the testifiers table. Go ahead.
I'm Marshall, and I'm from DRFA, and I've currently competed in palm tree seizure, forestry, and wildlife.
I'm Autumn Brass. I'm from DRFA, and I have no agriculture background, but I'm interested in forestry and natural resources.
I'm Katie Martin from the DRFA, and I do poultry and parliamentary procedure.
I'm Colby Gunderson from DRFA. I compete in parliamentary procedure and run a turf grass management business. Our chapter was only 3 years old now.
Very good. Thank you all very much. I didn't catch the gal that was second up in the back row. Could you stop down here again for a second? One that talked second. Yeah, the one. Yeah. Just want to ask you a quick.
Her name is Autumn.
Okay, I couldn't hear. Sorry. Autumn, please. You mentioned, have a chair, thank you. You were one of several kids that mentioned you had no agricultural background. Could you just tell us how you became involved in FFA and what was the attraction to get you involved in FFA? Just take a couple of minutes and tell us. Speak into the microphone, please. Identify yourself and so I can hear it this time, too.
Well, I'm Autumn Drotz. I'm from Deer River, and I have grown up on with some horses and animals. I've been involved in things like that, but I really got interested in natural resources this past summer, and I never really thought about doing FFA until I got interested into it, and
So natural resources, so it branches off. It's not just about actually farming, but other areas, so that's what kind of got your interest? Well, very good. Thank you very much. Didn't mean to put you on the spot, but that was interesting. Again, thank you all so much for stopping in today, and again, travel safely if you're headed back home today. And you are excellent representatives for agriculture, and for that we all say thank you very much. It's a great story to tell, and continue on that story, on your paths and in your career paths, and just the best of luck. So thank you all very much. couple of bills here, but first of all, we have some minutes to approve, and Representative Kunesh-Podi, did you have a chance to check the minutes from February 28th? Would you approve them?
I have, and I do approve them from that, what was it, February 28th. Thank you.
Thank you much. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Disapprove, same sign. The minutes are approved. Thank you very much. First up today is Chair Hamilton, and it's House File 3152. Representative Pearson, would you like to move that bill?
Well, I did want to mention, we don't operate under Robert's rules, so for the Deer Haven team that's here, I'm confident that we're under Mason's rules, so please don't judge us based on what your experiences are. But I would like to move House File 3152 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation and Regional Governance Policy.
Chair Hamilton, present your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is brought to me by the FFA Foundation, looking for ways not only to show our support, but also to generate some additional dollars that can be invested back into both 4-H and FFA. And this would establish a license plate to do that very thing. Mr. Chairman, there would be, in addition to the registration taxes required, there would be another contribution of $20 annually that would be invested into an account that would go back to support these programs. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions or turn it over to my testifiers.
Questions from members? Seeing none, let's hear from your testifier.
Val Arsfold, I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota FFA Foundation. Chairman Anderson and representatives, thank you for this opportunity. Educating and supporting our youth is the best way to invest in a prosperous future. This quote by John Andrus is one of my favorites, as I share his belief that a brighter tomorrow is the result of supporting the development of today's youth. On behalf of current and future FFA and 4-H members, I ask for your support of Bill Number 3152 to initiate an agricultural specialized license plate that would not only celebrate agriculture's important role in Minnesota, but also allow Minnesota citizens to take an active role in supporting agricultural programs as delivered by Minnesota 4-H and Minnesota FFA. Minnesota FFA, as you have heard, has a rich history and an even brighter future in preparing young people to be leaders for their local communities and agriculture. There are over 22,000 students enrolled in agricultural education classes across the state. And as Katie and Maddie so nicely shared, we're in 195 schools across the state. We always look for opportunities to grow. Of these 22,000 students who are in our high school classrooms, 10,400, or as we work toward 11,000, are actively participating in the FFA. These students are developing skills that will prepare them for careers in agriculture business systems, animal systems, biotechnology systems, food products and processing, natural resources and environmental systems, plant systems, power, structural, and technical systems. FFA involvement is focused on helping students develop their leadership skills, career success, and personal growth. At the same time that the Minnesota FFA is doing great things, Minnesota 4-H is doing their part in developing leaders for our communities. With 4-H programs in every county in Minnesota, they are work with youth based on their interest and guided by adult mentors to develop their own pathway through the 4-H. They do this by offering a broad menu of local 4-H programs. They have hands-on learning, learning by doing, opportunities for everyone. Of Minnesota 4-H members, nearly 16,000 of them are enrolled or involved in agricultural-related areas that include the livestock areas that we oftentimes see at the Minnesota State Fair, but have first started at their county fairs. Veterinary science and a recent program that was so successful here in Minnesota, it's now being mirrored nationally, called the Science of Agriculture program. So you might be wondering why a specialized agricultural license plate. With the current economic challenges within the agricultural sector, we are working to secure funds for the important work of FFA and 4-H. A specialized license plate Celebrating Agriculture will provide Minnesotans a voluntary way to show their support of this important work. In researching similar efforts, there are over 15 states that already offer an agricultural license plate that celebrates agriculture and reinvests in the youth involved in FFA and 4-H. Minnesota auto owners are very receptive to paying additional fees to support causes they value. We believe, and we have heard that support already from the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Minnesota Farm Bureau, CHS, and Compeer Financial, just to name a few, that they will get behind and support a plate like this. But there are currently over 665,000 special plates in circulation in Minnesota. We're convinced that the agricultural community would rally for our youth through this. As we consider how these funds would be used, our focus is to ensure that students, regardless of their economic status, which you heard already we are actively serving, have access to current and developing programs. An example of this for the FFA would be to not only support programs like the Intense, which our officers already referenced, but to look at new ways that we can serve underprivileged or existing students in our program. This is an intentional effort to help support the students not only see the opportunities available to them in agriculturally related careers, but better prepare and develop an understanding of the opportunities that their partners help and provide for them. So you might be considering or asking yourself, how does this help constituents in my district? Who wouldn't want to be part of this success? Students enrolled in career and technical education classes, which agricultural education is part of, graduate at a rate of 91.5%. That's nearly 10% higher than the state average, according to the Minnesota Department of Education's Federal Carl Perkins database. Youth in both organizations are actively involved in their community and serving as volunteers and helping develop a better, stronger community. Youth involved in 4-H are more than four times likely to contribute to their communities as other youth, and about two times as likely to be civically active involved, according to youth.gov. I believe Minnesotans want students to be successful in the classroom and active contributors to their communities. Minnesota FFA and Minnesota 4-H have a proven record of doing just that. With your help, we'll be supporting agriculture's bright future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Arzbold. Any members of the audience care to testify on the bill? If not, again, oh, very good. Come on down, sir.
Chairman Anderson and members, for the record, my name is Thomas DeVita. I am the Support Services Program Director for the Department of Public Safety Driver and Vehicle Services Division.
Welcome.
Before I begin my testimony, I'd like to add that I'm a former 4-H member from McLeod County. Just want to add a couple points of notes. As we're all probably aware, appropriations for MNLARS are still under review. Adding a special plate does require MNLARS programming. Factors that will impact the ability to meet the proposed effective date. Just want to let you know that DVS would need to come back to you with more information on a timeline as those discussions continue to occur.
Thank you very much, sir. Question from First Representative Norness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton. I was just thinking, looking at the bill you have in front of us here, I like the idea for one thing, but when it calls for design of the plates, I was wondering, does that open up a possibility of a contest within FFA so that they could design it?
Ms. Arzbold or Chair Hamilton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norness, I'd like Val to go ahead and take that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I believe that we would really utilize the talent and the energy of our members to develop and celebrate what this image could look like. So we would definitely look to have them involved and then use some of our other partners if it needed any, you know, last-minute tweaks. But we've got so much talent. And one thing that I think is really special and unique about FFA, you think about us with our agricultural roots, but we're also developing them and their artistic abilities as well, whether it's be our state chorus, our state band, things that, you know, we encourage them to be well-rounded people. So thank you for that idea.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, this might be more for the gentleman who testified from the DBS, but do we have an idea of what the annual cost of administrating this account is? And I see that the money collected first goes to pay for the annual cost from the state.
We may have to have the DPS person come up again.
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
I was curious about the cost. So the money that's collected under this bill, the costs first go to pay for the annual cost of administering the account. So I'm assuming that there's some administrative cost from the state that the money first pays for before any money would be distributed to FFA or 4-H. Do we, from your experience in these vanity plates or the specialty plates, is there an annual cost that is incurred?
Actually, the $10 plate fee almost works out entirely to cover both the production of the plate at $6.78 with the balance of it going to mailing costs. I'm not aware that there's an administrative fee from the department, but I don't have that answer for you at the moment.
And follow-up
representative.
Yeah. Follow-up question is the is there a cap to the amount of money that can be dispersed to both FFA and 4-H? Is there or is it unlimited amount?
It's however the statute requires. There wouldn't be something in place from the Department of Public Safety that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Could you repeat your name again?
Yeah, sure. It's Thomas DeVita.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeVita. Seeing no other testifiers on the committee or in the audience, Chair Hamilton, would you care to have any final comments?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, you know, we've said this before. It doesn't matter if it's male or female, urban or rural, black, brown, or white. These are the best students that the state has to offer. It's so much fun when they come to the Capitol. And there has been a big initiative to reach out to metro areas and form FFA chapters there as well. I know I was invited to visit with folks and tour Highland Park in St. Paul and also Humboldt High School and others. And this is exciting. These students here are fantastic. And this is one of my favorite days at the Capitol is when it's FFA Day on the Hill. So I simply ask for your support.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Hamilton. Representative Pearson, are you prepared to renew your motion?
I will renew my motion that the House File 3152 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation and Regional Governance.
Very good. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Bill's on its way. Thank you, Chair Hamilton.
Chairman, members of the committee.
We're going to get Representative Detmer up there. We do have a presentation on the Ag Land Preservation, which may explain the bill, but Representative Detmer has some other competing conflicts, so we're going to get him up there just as quickly as we can. So, good morning, Representative Detmer, and we're going to be looking at House File 3127, and Representative Daniels, would you care to move the bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I move the House File 3127 to be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
And there's an amendment to get the bill in shape. Representative Daniels, would you care to move the amendment?
Yes, I move H3127A1 amendment.
And any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and committee members. It's just an honor to be here to see all the blue jackets here. I grew up on a dairy farm down in Rice County in Faribault, and I think if you've been involved with the Ag and FFA, you probably remember the name Paul Day. He was a educator at Forest Lake High School, and he was a kind of an icon when it comes to the FFA programs. And House File 3127 is basically a bill that would authorize immediate withdrawal of land enrolled in a metropolitan agriculture preserve when a state agency or other government unit acquires the land in fee title or obtains easement for the purposes of creating a expanding a public trail and park. And that's why it's coming before the Ag Committee here. And I have brought with me the mayor of Scandia, Christine Maevsky, and she has a unique situation being a mayor and also a farmer. And I would like to have her just share her background.
Good morning. Identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Chairman Anderson and committee members. Thanks very much for having us here today. My name is Christine Majewski. I'm the mayor of Scandia, and it may be more appropriate to say a metropolitan mayor who's also a farmer. I think there are lots of farmer mayors out there throughout the state, but my husband and I are the co-owners of Poplar Hill Dairy Goat Farm, which has been the main supplier of fluid goat milk in Minnesota and actually the five state areas for the past 45 years. We have been farming in Scandia. We found a metropolitan agriculture niche for ourselves that has worked very well for us and for our family. We have about 700 dairy goats. We've been on DHIA for over 40 years. We are have children, two of our children who were FFA members and also 4-H members, four children who were 4-H members and went through 4-H, and now three grandchildren who are going through 4-H and one of whom is in FFA. So we're very strongly connected to farming, as well as being, I'm very proud to be the mayor of our wonderful community of Scandia. In 2016, my husband and I were adopted into the Minnesota Livestock Breeders Hall of Fame, the first dairy goat breeders to be so inducted in the history of that very auspicious organization. We're here today to explain to you our bill, which Representative Detmer is graciously presenting to you, to expedite the movement of the Gateway Trail into downtown Scandia as it makes its way further north and then actually up to the Immigrant Trail and beyond. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to our city administrator, Neil Saltis, and our Scandia resident, Don Herman.
Good morning, sir. Tell us who you are and proceed with your testimony.
Chairman Anderson and committee members, my name is Neil Saltis. I'm the city administrator for Scandia. Scandia is within the metro, but, you know, one of the prime values in Scandia, as we've, you know, spent the past year or so on our comprehensive plan, is to preserve our rural values. Preserving agriculture on a long-term basis is important to the city of Scandia. But the other thing that you see is with the growth of the popularity of using trails and cyclists. So one of the things that's there's been in the planning for a long while is the extension of the Gateway Trail, which is probably the most popular state trail that now extends from St. Paul and ends at Pine Point in Stillwater Township. Ultimately, the Gateway Trail is planned for a corridor that will go through William O'Brien State Park, which happens to be one of the most popular parks in the state and draws visitors from around the state and, quite frankly, around the region to it. That will connect through downtown Scandia up to the Immigrant Trail, which then will swing over and ultimately make its way up to Duluth. Putting together trails and parks is a very long-term, a long-term process that takes piece by piece by piece. And I know the DNR has worked very, very diligently on that. In 2016, the DNR purchased an easement for the Gateway Trail over the Arden Johnson property. And this is the last piece of property that completes a 1.8-mile segment between William O'Brien State Park and, quote, downtown Scandia. And what this is it covers 8/10 of a mile through Mr. Johnson's property. Mr. Johnson's property is currently in Metropolitan Ag Preserve. He has 210 acres. The trail easement purchased by the DNR is roughly 50 feet wide along the west edge of the property and encompasses about slightly less than 7.5 acres of the property. With the Metropolitan Ag Preserve provisions, the statutes allow for any portion of the property to come out of that designation without penalty if it's bought by condemnation, but not by voluntary purchase. So by fact that the state agency, the DNR, purchases the easement, we have to still, or Mr. Johnson still needs to go through that 8-year termination period in order to utilize that trail. We have a letter from the DNR that basically says that, no work can commence on that trail. I think it's until December 2024. When you're a small community that retains its rural values, attracting people into the downtown, it was a traditional crossroads downtown, and as many, many, agricultural-based communities, the downtown, has suffered a little bit just through the lack of economic activity. And the possibility of bringing people, families up from the park, because right now to get from the park to downtown Scandia, there is no direct way. At least here it's 1.8 miles. By road it's probably more like 3 miles. On state highway with speed limits of 55 miles an hour, hopefully if people are driving at that rate. So this route, it presents an opportunity to really, number one, preserve that property over which it's there, because Mr. Johnson still intends to farm his property. But it gives us that opportunity to utilize that and also bring some of that economic development and bring families into Scandia to bolster our local economy. In looking at our particular localized situation with Mr. Johnson, the feeling was that, what we're seeking to do is really far, could be applicable, where we say statewide, it's really only within the metro area for this particular provision, the Metropolitan Agricultural Bill. That it really, in our mind, would make sense that if the state is investing its dollars, when I say investing its dollars, the master plan for William O'Brien State Park going back over a decade calls for this trail. The state started acquisition of the easement in Scandia, I believe in 2007 they started acquiring properties. This was the final link. So, we're seeking support for this bill for the simple reason that it makes sense that if the state feels it's important enough to acquire the property, that potentially only over that segment acquired by the state or a local government could be removed upon request of the state or local government agency. So to localize it in Mr. Johnson's case, while he owns 210 acres, all of that except his 7.43 acres, would remain with that Metropolitan Agricultural Preserve designation, which is consistent with our zoning on that property.
Very good. Thank you. Questions from members? Seeing none, next testifier. Mr. Solta, just quickly, I would assume that Mr. Johnson is in favor of this. There's no local opposition to this plan. Is that correct?
Chairman Anderson, that is correct. There is no local opposition. As a matter of fact, I believe, if this provision was here, we may, I think he would have probably agreed to work with the DNR far sooner than he has.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next testifier.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Herman. I'm a resident of Scandia, and I'm formerly did a fair amount of lobbying here, but in this particular case, I'm working on a volunteer basis with Cycling Scandia, Friends of Scandia Parks. We originally started out with just dealing with this individual property, but in talking to particularly Senator Housley, who's the co-author in the Senate, she said, gee, this seems like it ought to be applicable generally. This would allow the landowner to have the choice in terms of timing of his sale and allowing the sale property to immediately be used. So consequently, it probably has a little bit more value to the acquiring agency. These are always voluntary purchases because other parts of this law already provide that if the property's condemned, there's a state process for allowing it to come out of ag preserves a little bit earlier. And of course, parks and trails are always unusual pieces of property that are, as Mr. Solta said, in long-term plans where the unique physical attributes of the property resulted in it being in the park plan for the community or the trail plan for the community. So we've already got a very extensive network of trails in Scandia on roads that are very lightly traveled. We also have two very good full shoulder connections between downtown Scandia and the Hardwood Creek Trail, and the Representative Detmer often takes students on. That's in Forest Lake. It's a state trail. And also the Immigrant Trail in Lindstrom, where I think this year the legislature is looking at connecting that trail through Interstate Park to downtown Taylor's Falls. So it's really kind of a hub of bicycling in the metro area, and the kind of activities that we see would greatly enhance the user appeal of William O'Brien. They could come into town. There would be three top lots available, baseball fields, tennis courts, all really directly adjacent to the bike trail, plus the most fabulous collection of Swedish pioneer buildings in the entire state at Gamel Garden, which is a very unique cultural facility in downtown Scandia, where they have a lot of concert, lecture, tour, and food programs, including taco days. So we hope that the committee will give us a path to be able to use this connection much sooner than 6 or 7 years from now, and we're hoping that the financial part of the bill, which comes out here, goes forward in the bonding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Herman. Seems to make sense. Question, Representative Salk?
I agree completely. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I agree completely that this makes sense, and it's common sense almost literally. But someplace there, we're not hearing from the kind of the other side of why this particular structure of protection existed, and are we somehow just convenient by their absence that we don't see the other side of this argument? I'm doubting that, honestly, but I think it's responsible for us to at least query that question, and maybe some of you that have enough substantial years of experience here that you know when this thing came in and what who the stakeholders of that concern are, and are we in any way treading on their thing? So I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just gnawing away at my head.
That's a fair observation. Look to our research staff, Mr. Savory or Mr. Sullivan, any ideas of some of the background history of this Metropolitan Ag Preserve? Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't personally have information on why the program was created. I know the department will be presenting soon on the Minnesota Ag Land Preservation Program, which is the statewide or outstate program that was modeled on this Metropolitan Ag Preserves Program. So maybe some of that context will be provided as part of the department's presentation.
So, Representative Song?
Mr. Chair, so they are going to be testifying before we're going to make a final thing, or is this horse going to be out of the gate before we hear even the background? And I may be barking at a tree that's not worth it, but
I think the horse may be out of the gate as far as this committee is concerned, but there are I believe some other stops, and it's got to go to the bonding committee as well, so I wouldn't be afraid to pass this along. My question to Representative Detmer would be, does your bill only open up this quick release to another governmental agency, not a private entity? Representative Detmer?
Representative, that's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Representative Mahoney?
I think a simpler way to ask Representative Salk's question is this something we see regularly where we come in and override this particular piece of this 1984 Act to preserve ag land? Whether 7.34 acres or whatever the heck it is, goes to create a park. It's not a problem. It's more, did we open a gate long ago and we're just following through, or is this for opening a gate, so to speak, on a consistent basis going forward? Who's got that information? I don't really know.
I would just add, Representative Mahoney, that in my time here, which is coming up on 10 years, I believe this is the second time we've heard a situation like this. And I recall Representative Hertas had a bill that if the cell tower were going to be put on to preserve land, they could get that small area. It was going to be a cell tower, but I don't think this is a widespread use or misuse of the preserve program, but others can speak on that if they have any knowledge. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, the chair is correct that last year Representative Hurtas's bill allowed cell towers as an eligible use within an ag preserve. That was a change to the law. And the same bill, if I'm not mistaken, I know it happened last year as well, was enacted in the special session, was that there was a provision added that said if the owner of the property within an ag preserve died, there was an exception to the normal 8-year period that someone has to wait has to put in an application before the restrictions on the land could expire. There was an exception put into place last year if the owner of the property dies.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Well, I'll comment. You're creating a bike path from a state park into a town. It's not a big issue, but it's obvious that we opened it. Representative Hurtas or the special session opened up a Pandora's box, so it's something that the chair actually needs to be aware of. There's in other committees, members that have been around for a number of years, you open the door, and all of a sudden, the semi-tractor trailer is coming behind you. So just a word of caution and understand that.
Yeah. Good point, and maybe the department at some point down the road could give us some numbers as to how many acres are involved in this metropolitan preserve. They're going to be talking now about the rural preserve, but point well taken. We'll get some information on that. Anybody in the audience who'd care to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, any other questions from members of the committee? If not, final thoughts? Representative Detmer?
Yeah, Chair Anderson, and thank you. Those thoughts that came from the committee are well taken, and I know that being part of this area of Scandia and my years of as an educator and taking my students down these trails, I think it's really important that we have safe trails to bicycle. I know I used to take them down Highway 97, and that road is such a busy big truck trail, and having trails for students to ride on or anybody to ride on is really important. And we're talking about an area here. If you've ever been along the St. Croix River, which my district travels along the St. Croix River all the way up to Taylor's Falls, all the way down to Stillwater, it's a beautiful area, and it's we have a lot of small farms. We have a lot of dairy farms and horse farms, and it's just a beautiful area. And I think this piece of legislation will keep that intact. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Daniels.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I renew my motion that House File 3127, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay, that's the motion. All in favor of this bill as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is approved. And the bill is on its way. Thanks, Representative Detmer. Thank you all for your patience. Next up, we have the department, who has been waiting patiently as well, to give us a rundown on a program called the Ag Land Preservation Program. And as folks file out, we will make way for Ms. Place. Good morning, and proceed and identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Whitney Place. I'm the Director of Legislative Affairs at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the opportunity to present the department's 2016-2017 Ag Land Preservation Program legislative report. The Minnesota Agricultural Land Preservation Program, established in 1984, is intended to protect farmland for future generations and to help farmers feel confident in making long-term decisions on their land. It also helps to control urban development on prime agricultural lands. This act was preceded in 1980 by the Metropolitan Ag Preserves Program, which the statewide program was modeled after. The main feature of this program is the agricultural preserve, a restrictive covenant on qualifying lands limiting use to agriculture and forest purposes. The benefits of enrolling land in an ag preserve are property tax credits at $1.50 per acre, protection from local ordinances or regulations that restrict normal agricultural activities, limitations on eminent domain proceedings, and prevention of projects like public sanitary sewer systems, public water systems, and public drainage systems. Agland preservation covenants are ongoing until the landowner or county initiates expiration. The date of expiration is 8 years from the date of notice. The notice of expiration by the landowner is initiated by informing the county. The notice may be rescinded during the first 2 years following that initial notification. The notice of expiration by the county must be communicated via mail and must meet two conditions. First, the county ag land plan and the official controls must be amended so that the land is no longer classified long-term agricultural use. And two, the Commissioner of Agriculture must review and approve the amended plan. After passage of the final act, five pilot counties, Douglas, Candiohi, Waseca, Winona, and Wright, participated in submitting agricultural land preservation plans. Currently, three of those counties, Waseca, Winona, and Wright, continue to have ag land preservation programs. To date, 122,947 acres are protected in these three participating counties, and then at a state level, including the acres protected in the Metropolitan Ag Preserves Program, a total of 331,066 acres are protected. Since 1987, any county located outside the metropolitan area is eligible to prepare a proposed agricultural land preservation plan under the program for review by the Commissioner of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture also has responsibilities of public awareness, financial assistance, and technical assistance. The department works with local governments, elected officials, and the public to increase awareness of the program and protection of agricultural lands. Technical and financial assistance is provided by the department to help prepare agricultural land preservation plans, as well as referral to other governmental or consulting services to address issues with the program. The tax benefits for the Ag Land Preservation Program are funded through a $5 surcharge on mortgage and deed recordings in all metropolitan and outstate counties participating in ag land preservation. One half of the fee is deposited in a conservation fund in the county general revenue fund, and one half is transferred to the Commissioner of Revenue. If the cost of the property tax credits exceeds funds available in the county account, the county is reimbursed by the Minnesota Conservation Fund from the State Department of Revenue. In 2016-2017, the department has expanded awareness and assistance efforts to include services aimed at improving the economic viability of farming operations in these preserves. First, the department is working on Minnesota FarmLink, which is a web-based tool used to connect prospective farmers with retiring farmers. And to date, we've made roughly 200 connections that otherwise would not have happened. The department has also developed a beginning and transitioning farmer resource website, which shares information about programs and services offered by farm-related organizations in Minnesota. It includes information about finding land, finding agricultural operations, farm management planning, legal services, networking, and mentoring. The Department of Agriculture sees the value in preserving agricultural land in Minnesota and has no further recommendations for the program at this time. And, Mr. Chair, with that, I stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Place. I have a couple of questions, and members as well. You mentioned not all counties take part in this. Could you explain that a little bit further?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, only the three counties mentioned are participating in this program. It is available to any county in the state, and we have, been contacted by other counties, but these are the only three that participate.
This is a question you may not be able to answer. Why? Why would only three counties take part in this? Do you have any idea?
Mr. Chair and members, it all has to do with how the counties plan and zone their lands, and certainly counties can zone agricultural land without using this program, but this program really does kind of protect the land for a long period of time.
So I was going to ask how this was different from Green Acres, but I think you answered that. This is more long-term.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. So I have a question that maybe is somewhat tangential to this, but I was curious. There's several news stories this morning about General Mills working to acquire 34,000 acres in South Dakota for organic production. And I guess I'm interested in organics. I've introduced several bills that would help with transition to organics or look at even trying to encourage areas where organic development might take place, and there you'd have organic production. But it seems, I imagine that the reason that General Mills is looking at South Dakota is there hasn't been a lot of organic production or avenues for them to acquire the organic wheat that they want to for production that they're trying to do. But they've contracted with an organization that's looking at helping to convert this. I'm wondering, would something like that fit into this kind of agricultural preservation if you're trying to move towards and really help out a Minnesota corporation that wants more organics? If you were to work with some, I forget the name of the organization that they worked with to acquire this land in South Dakota, but it seems to me there's an opportunity there if we want to preserve ag land and with all the other kinds of benefits of organic farming that might go along with that. Could you comment on that?
Ms. Place?
Mr. Chair and members, I do apologize. Our manager for the program is on vacation this week. So I'm not entirely clear on this, but I don't think that this land could be acquired by any corporate interests. I think it has to be individual landowners, but I could be wrong on that. I don't know if Colby has more information.
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't on the tip of my fingers here, but I will look and try to get back to the committee.
Okay. Was your question that a company would buy the land or the individual farmers would do the organic farming?
Well, I'm not. That's not really clear from the article that I read. A number of the bills that I've looked at or introduced would encourage individual farmers to do that kind of organic production and transition to organic farming. But I was curious about this, and I don't know exactly how the 34,000 acres is used. I want to learn more about it, but it struck me as interesting that either Minnesota may have missed an opportunity there to provide General Mills with more organics, there's concern. I've heard this from others too, that sometimes organics are difficult to acquire for the kind of production that they want to do. I know Campbell Soup is even considering going to organic chickens and things like that. I just want to make sure that we're in the mix with that in some way. And kind of curious about the story that came up there.
Yeah, thank you. I know that Minnesota requires a three-year period to transfer to organic. I don't know is that a national thing or is that a statewide thing, Ms. Place?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that's the national standard.
Okay. So there would be no advantage because of the time situation. Ms. Place, just doing some quick math, and this may answer a question from the earlier bill, if the total number of acres preserved statewide is about 331,000, and in those three counties, 122, would it be safe to say that about 200,000 of those acres are in the Metro Preserve?
Mr. Chair, members, yes. Our report states that 208,119 acres are in the Metro program.
Thank you very much. And anybody in the audience, whoever's left, care to comment or testify on the report? If not, any other committee members have questions or comments? Seeing none, again, thank you much. There was a gathering this morning. Any official press release on what came out this morning, or is it too early yet in this place?
Mr. Chair, yes, I do have the press release, and I'll make sure to get that to all of the committee members.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was the nitrogen rule, but there was an announcement this morning. Second go around there, and waiting to see what that says. So thank you very much. Well, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. To the question about whether corporations could own farmland within a metropolitan or a statewide ag preserve or metropolitan ag preserve, I believe the answer is no. The state corporate farm law generally bans ownership or bars ownership or operation of farms by corporate entities. And for purposes of the Metro Ag program, owner of the ag land is defined as a resident of the United States, owning land specified in the application. And includes an individual, legal guardian, or a family farm corporation as defined under the corporate farm law.
Thank you.
Thank you much. We have outstanding research staff here in the committee, so thank you for that. If that's it, today's meeting is adjourned. Thank you much.